So we're holding about the middle of Lamed Dalet Amud Aleph, Lamed in Mishnah Chadash. Itmar, we have a discussion of Amoraim as follows.
So where are we standing?
So we left off. So we finished with the whole matter of somebody who touches Kodshin, where we said the third explanation of Ula's statement, which led us into the whole side discussion, is that when Ula started by saying that from the Chokodesh Le'siga, we have a hekesh between Bia and Negia, and that therefore we learn from that, that Bia mixed with Shmabia, the Gemara says that no, that the third explanation of Ravin in the name of Rav Abohu is that's not what the hekesh comes to teach us. The hekesh is the other way around, rather it comes to teach us that the word tiga in that pasuk means, in addition to touching, it also means eating. And therefore it means that a person who eats, that a Tommy who eats Kodesh is chayav Kodesh. And that led us into the discussion. So it doesn't teach anything about Bia B'mikta. Right. So again, I mean, the different ways that the Gemara understood all the statement yield different explanations, and in the end, would Bia B'mikta be Shma Bia or not? If the Rambam again holds that not, on a Daraisa level it's not, Darabonon, fine, yes, but not Daraisa, whereas the Raiva disagrees with him, because again, we had different ways of understanding all those statements. Is he talking about that it is Bia even as far as Kodesh? Is he talking about it's only as far as Malkus? Or is he talking about not at all? So those different ways yield different ways of understanding. We haven't proved anything. Because ultimately we have all those statements. The Gemara has understood it in three different ways. So depending which one you accept, then you have either the halacha that Bia B'mikta is also Daraisa and it's Chayav Kodesh or Malkus as the case may be, or it's not also Daraisa at all.
What is that?
Again, to a certain extent, it's Hilchot al Mashiach, because to a certain extent, the halachas will only fully apply when Mashiach comes. But the Rambam paskins that Bia B'mikdash the Rambam paskins that Bia B'mikdash is not also Daraisa, but only Darabonim, which leads into this thing that I was...
Because there's no Bia B'mikdash?
No, because he learns that in the end, the Gemara has concluded over here that Ula is not saying anything about it being also Daraisa. That the whole thing that he was bringing from Rish Lakish is teaching us something else. So therefore, according to the Rambam, for example, the stuff we were talking about the other day, that a Tomei putting his fingers into the crevices of the Kodesh, according to the Rambam, on a Daraisa level, at least it may not be an issue. On the Darabonan level, fine, you shouldn't be doing that. But according to the Raivad, on a Daraisa level, you'd have a problem with it.
Implying that if you put your whole body in today, that would be an issue.
Well, so it depends, actually. If the person is, all of us are Tomei mates nowadays, but technically, a Tomei Met is allowed to go into parts of the Har HaBayis. He's just not allowed to enter beyond the Chayil. Now, we don't know exactly where the Chayil is. No, so it would be actually, if you have the Har HaBayis, 500 by 500 Amos, somewhere within that is the Chayil, and 10 Amos beyond that begins the Azara. Because then the Chayil is a Chayil. Some of the Rishonim understand that the Chayil surrounded the Azara on all four sides. Some understand that it was only on the east. Whatever, we're only on the south, whatever. It was 10 Amos wide. You have the standard opinion, most of the Rishonim understand, is that the Chayil was a flat area that was just marked off by a wooden fence, Sodig. The Rambam understands that the Chayil was actually a low wall. Be that as it may, whatever it is, it was a 10 Amos wide area. So, Tmei and Mace are not allowed to go beyond there, because of the Zera of Yerushalayim, that we said before, whatever, but the point is, That in principle, if we knew exactly where the Chayil is, then we could go on the rest of the Har HaBayis. The problem is we don't know. So you have Israeli soldiers that go up there when necessary, but okay, they go wherever they have to go, because it's a matter of the Korach Nefesh. But you have people, you have some Rabbanim, a minority, but you do have, who argue that based on this, that there are areas on the Har HaBayis to which we're allowed to go as long as we're only coming there. And have toivled and had a head of Shemesh, so we're not Tzvul Yom, and we're not Zovim or Bala Keri or what have you. So they argue there are certain areas on the inside of the, in the present day Har HaBayis that we should be allowed to go into. The majority opinion, as far as I know, says that no, we should consider the whole thing off limits because we really don't know where we can and can't go.
And the present Har HaBayis is bigger?
The present Har HaBayis is bigger than 500 by 500. That's part of the confusion also, is knowing where in there was the original 500 by 500.
So it's some sort of square within today's
trapezoidal shaped Har HaBayis. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to start a new discussion. Ishma, Hamala Evra Behemoth Tmeya Agabim Zbeach. Agabim Zbeach. If somebody offers limbs from a Tomei animal on the Mizbeach, now obviously you're not allowed to do it, but what would be the penalty for it? So Rashi says, for example, horses, camels, whatever. Rish Lakish Amar Loike, Rav Yechanan Amar Ein Loike. Rish Lakish says he'll get Malchus for it. Rav Yechanan says he will not. Rish Lakish Amar Loike, because he says like this.
No, it's a
new discussion. I don't think it has anything directly to do with the previous discussion. It may very well be that the Gemara is only bringing it in over here because it's another machloek that the Rabbi Yechon and Rish Lakish having to do with Tuma. Before we were talking about Tuma Sagup and Tuma Sabasar, so now we'll talk about the Tuma of the end. No. Okay. So Rish Lakish on the loike, because he says like this. The Torah tells us tahora ein. The Torah tells us you should bring a behemoth. You can bring a behemoth tahora as a carbon, because the pasuk says you can bring from cattle, from sheep, and from goats, implying tmei alai, implying, but you should not offer tomei animals on the mizbeach. The lava bomb is called esa loikinolo. And Rish Lakish will say, even though now this is a lav that comes from, that's deduced from an esa, it's not a normally a lav that's phrased as don't do such and such. Here the Torah doesn't tell us don't bring horses on the mizbeach, but it tells us do bring cows or sheep or goats, which implies therefore that any other species, that a tummy species of domestic animals is off limits. That's a lav of what we call esa, and Rish Lakish will say you get malchus for being over on such a lav. So a lav directly obviously would be malchus, but he's saying over here, even though it's not a direct lav, even though it's an indirect lav, nevertheless, the Gemara is going to ask on in a second, the Gemara is going to change what we're saying, but yeah, this is what we're starting. Okay. Rabbi Yechanan ain't like an olive. Rabbi Yechanan says you don't get malchus for it because lav above a kalasa ain't like an olive, because he said a lav that comes that's deduced from an asset, you don't get malchus for it. Because just like you don't get malchus for the essay itself, so also you don't get malchus for violating a lav that's deduced from that essay.
Yeah, well, the Torah should mention it directly. If the Torah doesn't mention it directly, then there's a reason.
Well, okay. Yeah. All right. Okay. Most of Rav Yirmiyah, however, Rav Yirmiyah asks on the Shlokish, how can you say that a lav abomitzal essay is considered a lav to the extent that you get malchus on it? We learn in a braisa, the pasuk says regarding the kosher animals in parasha, the kosher and not kosher animals in parasha Shmini, oisa techelu, the pasuk says anything that has split hooves and chews its cud, that you should eat, implying v'loy behemoth tmeya, implying only that, but not a behemoth tmeya, the lava but call that the esse. And that is that's a lav that's deduced from an esser, and it only has the force of an esser. Because Rashi explains that the braisa, the original braisa in Teres Koyanim, goes on to continue. That, from that we would only know then, that if a person were to eat a non-kosher animal, a horse or a camel or what have you, we would only know so far from that he's over on an esser. How do we know that he's also over on a lois esser? How do we know that he's also over on a loisaseh? It is because the pasuk continues, achas zeh loisaseh, so however the following you should not eat. So in other words, the point of that is, we need a separate lav, we need an explicit statement in the Torah, you should not eat such and such, to make him chayav malchus. Otherwise, he can't be chayav malchus on the basis of the deduction from oisaseh chayavu.
You never find situations where you have people, you derive from a loisaseh, from an esteh, without having a loisaseh and having malchus.
There is no situation.
It has to be, according to him, there has to be a lav, right?
According to the Shlokish, we're saying it's a lav, and you get malchus for it. Right. But Rav Yirmiyah is asking, we see when it comes to kosher and non-kosher animals, that if it were only for the fact that the Torah said, oisa techeru, from which we would deduce any other carbon, any other animal you cannot eat, then that would only have the force of an esa, and you wouldn't get malchus for it. How do we know that you also get malchus for it? It's because the pasuk explicitly says, achas zeh lo tzarchus. But the following you should not eat. And it mentioned the four animals that have only one kosher of
them. Of course, there's no pasuk to say that.
Had there not been a pasuk to say that, you couldn't get malchus. So how can Rish Lakish be saying that you get malchus for lav abomikol? Amalei Rav Yaakov, Rav Yirmiyah, but Tachlifa, Azrullah. Fine. Let me explain it to you. It's a little bit different. It's a little bit different than what we were saying. Be'evri behemoth tmeya dekula amalei tzvi. If a person offers limbs of a behemoth tmeya on the mizbeach, then there's no argument that it's only an esa. That it's only, Rashi learns that it's only an esa, and you would not get malchus. because wait, I'll tell you in a second. I'll tell you in a second what the Rambam says about it. When it comes to a behemoth tmeya, everybody agrees. There's no machlokas, Rabbi Yochanan, and Rish Lakish. What do they agree on? That you have. So, okay. So Rashi learns it means they all agree, as we just said, that it's an F. Therefore, no malchus. The Rambam, on the other hand, paskins that when the Gemara says everybody agrees, it means he does get malchus for offering limbs of a behemoth tmeya. Now, how does that work? So how does it work? So the Kesef Mishnah over there talks about, the Kesef Mishnah and the other notes of Kalim on the Rambam talk about as follows. First of all, I mean, our Gemara is saying loitzvigi, fine, loitzvigi can mean they both agree that it's, they both agree that there's malchus involved. But it's like this also. But there's also like this. When it comes to eating non-kosher animals, so okay, we know the Torah tells us explicitly that you're not allowed to eat four that have one sin. We know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to eat a camel or a hare or a shofan, whatever that is, and a pig. What about, for example, would you be allowed to eat a horse or some other, you know, or an elephant or some creature that doesn't have either one? All of those have only one sin. What about, for example, a horse or a kangaroo or any of the other billion species out there that have no simon at all? How do we know we're not allowed to eat them? So actually what it is we use a combination of on the one hand a kavachomer, that if you can't eat the ones that have one simon, how much more so the ones that have no simon?
Either one or the other.
The turtle says like this. The turtle starts by saying you can eat any animals that's true they cut and have split holes. Then the turtle says the following you cannot eat, each of which has one simen. It lists four creatures that have only one simen. The camel chews its cud but doesn't have fully split hooves. The shofan, the arnevet, the high rat hare, whatever those are exactly, same thing. The chazer is the other way around. It has split hooves but it doesn't chew its cud. All of those, tmeim heim alachem, all those are all simen. Now, how do we know from that? What about other animals that have neither simen? What about would you be allowed to eat an elephant, for example? Turd and say you can't eat it. But we have, first of all, we make a kavach choymer. As neither simon, that's the point. But the turd doesn't say you can't eat an elephant. The turd doesn't say you can't eat a horse. The turd doesn't say that you can't...
The turd says you cannot eat what has no two simonim.
The turd says anything that has two simonim, you may eat. The ones that have only one simon, the turd lists out and says you may not eat them. But what about the ones that have no simon? So one aspect of it is that we make a kavach choymer. If you're not allowed to eat the ones with one simon, then truly you're not allowed to eat the ones with zero simonim. That's one. And number two, again, we do use this lav abam we call esther that we were mentioning before. The fact is, the Torah tells us that the Torah tells us only the following you may eat, the ones that chew their cud and have split hooves. So we do derive from that it means all other ones are off limits. However, what we do is like this. Because we have a lab in the case of a four that have only one simon, and because we're able to make a kavachomer from that to say that all the other ones also. Usually we can't punish somebody based on a kavachomer, but here, where we already have a lab of what we call essence, we do, after all, have a lab that's deduced from the essence. So that makes it possible for us to use that kavachomer. That makes it possible for us to treat the kavachomer as not just to say ein onshin mati, you can't punish somebody on the basis of the kavachomer, but you can say that kavachomer is revealing to us that lav applies to all of them. It's not learning something new, but it's revealing that lav that we learned before from the SF does apply across the board. Hello. So by the same logic, the Rambam can also learn like this, that when it comes to the Avery Behemoth Tmeya, same idea. Given that, again, the Torah tells us you can only offer kosher animals on the mizbeach, and we have a lava b'mikol esther that implies, therefore, not non-kosher animals. The same kavachomer that we're able to use to say that eating non-kosher animals that have no simonim results in malchus, we can use that same kind of thing to say that offering the limbs of behemoth tmeya on the mizbeach also results in malchus. So even though ain oinshin min adin, in this case it's not oinshin min adin, in this case it's gilui milta ba'alma. It's because we already have a lava of a kol eser, so that to get that together with the kavachomer is able to yield us a full-fledged lava. So that is how the Rambam understands, therefore, that if you're mala evri behemoth tmeya, then you would get malta, even according to the
Yishin. Because it's not exactly the same derivation. In one case, you have two lava.
In both cases, you have a lava of a kol eser, and you have a carbochloma, and you have a carbochloma, and you have the carbochloma. So just, again, just like the carbochloma when it comes to eating them, is able to make it that you're, that you apply it not only, that the ISR applies not only to the ones that have one simen, but the ones that have zero simonim. The same way when it comes to offering them on a mezbeach, same idea. So
what is the machlokas?
Ki pligi b'chaya. No, rather the machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish would refer to if you offer the limbs of a chaya, a kosher chaya, like a deer on the mizbeach.
So far
what we have is, never mind today for animals, never mind non-kosher animals like horses or what have you, there's no question, you mala them on the mizbeach, everybody agrees. What does everybody agree to? Again, according to Rashi, everybody agrees that you're not Chayav Malchus, and according to the Rambam, everybody agrees you are Chayav Malchus. Okay. You can, whatever. Okay. But the question is, what about Kipligi B'chayah? The Machlokas would be if you offer the limbs of a Chayat Tmeyah. A Chayat Tahurah, like a deer. Now, the Torah only tells us that you can only bring domestic animals. So, Vahachi, most of the discussion rather goes as follows. Rabbi Yechanan would say that if you offer the limbs of a chaya to hoda on the mizbeach, all you're over on is an esther, therefore no malchus. Because, in other words, again, it's a lava bomb to call esther. If the Torah is telling you only cows and sheep and goats, that implies, but not any other kosher species. Therefore, it's a lav, but it's a lav of amukol esther. It's a lav that's deduced from an esther, therefore no malchus, as we said before. Rish Lakish, ama ena oval of a light bulb. Rish Lakish says that if you offer the limbs of a chaya tahora on a mizbeach, you're not over on anything, not even an esther.
Even though it's not, because the question is,
why? Because Ahula mitzvah, because he says, when the pasuk is telling us, min abehema, min abakar, min abtoin, doesn't mean it can only be from those. It means, the mitzvah is that you bring them from those. You want to bring a chaya, then you have your shut. You're entitled to bring a chaya if you would want to. You're not obligated to, unlike the various korbanos, you're obligated to bring a sheep or a goat or an ox. You're not obligated to bring a chaya. In fact, the Medrash says on it that Hashem had rachmanos on the Jewish people like this. You shouldn't have to go out into the forest to go hunting to be able to find an animal for a korban. So instead, like this, you just bring one from your own barnyard. But according to the Shlokish, if you wanted to, you could. Therefore, there's no lav involved. According to the Shlokish, there's no lav involved. You want to bring a chaya Torah as a korban, you can. That the Medrash says that Hashem had rachmanos on the Jewish people. Why did he say that only domestic animals can be brought as a korban? Because like this, you shouldn't have to go out and then go trap one or whatever. Yeah. Not at that time, no. Unless the Torah tells us that it changes at a later time. And the Torah says, let's say, the Torah doesn't get changed. But anyway, so when it comes to a non-kosher animal... Okay. So when it comes to a non-kosher animal, that's different. Rashi brings, you have the pasuk in Yechezkel that says that korbanos have to be mimashke Yisrael, meaning from what can be eaten and drunk by the Jewish people. Therefore, we learn from that any non-kosher species or any shaper or whatever, anything that's also for a hediyah to eat is also also to be brought as a korban. So behemoth tmeyas and chayas tmeyas are out, fine. But the chayas tmeyas, a chayas tahora, the Shlokish says, there's no issue in it. Moitiv Rava, the Rava asks on it, we learn in a braisa, ilu nema korban lashem behema. If the pasuk had said it in the order, if the pasuk had just said that you bring a korban to Hashem from the behema, then that wouldn't. The word behema means domestic animals, but it doesn't only necessarily. You could say, okay, but sometimes you have the Torah use the word behema in a generic sense to mean even wild animals. So you wouldn't know that wild animals are... No. Kenyan Shanema, as you find, for example, when the Torah, again, in Parashas Re'eh, lists the kosher and non-kosher species, there it actually lists out the 10 kosher species of land animals, and it says, "Zos ha-behema asher techelu." It says, these are the behemoths that you may eat. Sure, an ox. Seich sovim v'seizim, sheep and goats, and then it continues, ayol of tzviv v'goymer, the deer and the gazelle, etc., or whatever the exact translation, and those are chayim. So you see from that the word behema includes chaya over there. So it's also zoysa behema, and then the second pasuk was 7 types of chaya. So if it only said that you bring a korban la'ashem behema, then you would think it means you could bring behema or you could bring chaya equally well. Tamad loyma bakal v'tzayin. Note, therefore, the pasuk continues only from the herd or from the flock, meaning cattle and sheep and goats. Bakal v'tzayin amarti l'chavah loy chaya. So I've only told you can bring a korbanet cattle and sheep and goats, but not wild animals. Now, continue the braita.
Ayo
and tzvi, wild kosher animals. Whatever the definition of them is exactly, deer, gazelle, whatever the point is, they're kosher animals. You can eat them. You can even eat their chaylev, but they're wild. They're not domesticated.
And
we see that they're still called behema. That's why the pasuk spell out saying minah behema, minah bako, minah son. Continue the braita. Yachol lo yavi. Okay, so you would think, fine. What it means is you're not supposed to bring wild animals to the carbon. Being heavy kosher, but okay. If you brought them, then it should be kosher. But yeah, what's the problem? Hol maza joima. And the braita says, after all, what could it conceivably be like? Imagine that a rebbe tells his Talmud, bring me wheat. The heavy le chitim with the orim. And what does the Talmud bring him? Wheat and barley. Now you can't say he's violating what his Rebbe told them. He's adding to what his Rebbe said. His Rebbe told him to bring wheat, and he brought wheat. He also brought barley with it. So what's the problem? So the same thing over here, the kosher. So therefore over here it should be kosher. The Torah is telling you that you can use domesticated animals, but the Torah is not saying that you can't use domesticated animals, the undomesticated animals, wild animals. So if you were to bring a wild animal, then it should be considered most of al barav. And that Torah points out it's slightly different. I mean, when he brings wheat and barley, never mind that. Torah itself is giving you permission to. The Torah itself is saying that you could do that. But Tosfos points out, actually, that's slightly different anyway, because in the Moshul and the Nimshul aren't quite the same thing. In the case of the Moshul, the Talmud is bringing wheat and he's bringing barley. Here, you're only bringing, let's say, a deer. You're not bringing it along with a sheep or something. Nevertheless, though, since you're bringing it in Meritzona, you're bringing it of your own free will, you can't get to say Tolo B'dayte, that Hashem left it up to you. Hashem left it up to your discretion. Do you want to go to the trouble of finding a wild animal, or do you just want to go to your backyard and get a domestic? So you would think that Talmud Loma, Bok of a sign. No, therefore again, the pasuk says Bok of a sign, implying Bok of a sign amarti l'chavah loy chaya. Specifically, Bok of a sign, you may not bring a chaya. Hol maza joima. Now what is that like? Well, Talmud Shomale Rabbi Al Tobi Li Elochistin. It's like a Talmud whose Rebbe tells him, bring me only wheat. The Hevel Echistin is the order, and the Talmud goes and brings him wheat and barley. There you can't say he's adding voluntarily to what his Rebbe told him. Then he's violating what his Rebbe told him, because he specifically told him, bring only wheat. Yes. Apostle, and therefore it should be apostle. So, So that is a contradiction against Rish Lakish, because Rish Lakish argued that there's no particular issur in bringing a chaya. You could bring it, it's only the mitzvah. So now we see from this braita that clearly not. The pasuk is specifically mentioning Rock of a sign to say only that. Okay, Shufta, you're right, a clear contradiction, and that's it. The halacha is not like Rish Lakish. The halacha is like Rav Yochanan, that if you bring Avery Behema Tahora, Chaya Tahora, that is on the Mizbeach, you're over on an Esther. You don't get Malkus, you know, you're not Chaya Malkus, so you don't get Malkus for an Esther. But you were over on an Esther.
And that's based on this reasoning?
Because this Braita told us that a Chaya Tahora is off limits for Korbanot. Not you should think that maybe it was voluntarily you could bring it if you want to, which is what Rish Lakish is arguing. We see from this braita is not, you may not bring a chaya tahora as a korban, and therefore if you do, you're over on an esser. But the Torah doesn't spell out in so many words that you can't bring it, therefore it's not a loisa, therefore it's not a loisa, therefore you don't get malchus, but you are over on an esser. Okay. Alright. Getting back now to the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, b'cholam shekib b'cholam. The Mishnah said that any of these stolen that we mentioned in the Mishnah, the Zor, the women, etc., the Tomei, we said if they received the blood and they did the Kabbalah and they had in mind chutzos mana or chutzos tanoi, so we said in the Mishnah, if there is still available daman nefesh, if the animal still has daman nefesh that has not been received in a case yet, then a kosher should receive it again and then continue with the halacha and the zrika like it's supposed to. So, b'minir shlokish min av yechim. So Rish Lakish asks Rav Yochanan as follows. Suppose somebody who's posel la'avoda if he does the zrika, maush yasashirayim. Now, of course, his zrika can't be a kosher zrika because he himself is kosher. Does it make it that the rest of the blood that's still in the neck of the animal is now considered shirayim? It's now considered leftover, and therefore it cannot be used for zrika. Or do we say that not? In other words, if it was a kosher had done the Kabbalah and the Zrika, then there's no question. The rest of it would be Shiraim. That's the definition of Shiraim. But here, where it was a apostle who did it, maybe he doesn't have
the Shrita, fine.
We're talking about the Kabbalah and so forth. The Rashi learns actually that primarily we're talking about over here about the Zrika. Even though the piece of the Mishnah that we're referring to is the Chol Shekiblu, Rashi learns that primarily we're talking about the Zrika. So if the apostle did Zrika with the blood of this korban, does he have the power to make that now the rest of the blood is now considered Shirayim, which is only supposed to be poured on the Yisoid, you can't use it for Zrika anymore, or not? Do we say since he's apostle, he doesn't have the power to accomplish that?
And therefore
the rest of it is not Shirayim, therefore the rest of it can be Niskabel, you can do another new Kabbalah, like I said in our Mishnah. In other words, Rashi learned that if the question was on Kabbalah, then Rish Lakish doesn't need to ask the question. We have the answer in our Mishnah. But he's asking about Zrika, right? Because our Mishnah had mentioned that if the apostle was Makabala, so he's asking about Zrika. Okay, Tosfos has a bit of discussion about that. Are we talking specifically about Zrika? Maybe the reason why we're asking is because in our Mishnah, not only the apostle was Makabala, but also he had a wrong Makshava. So maybe that's a factor. In other words, maybe if he had done it with the proper machshava, then maybe it would make the rest shirayim. So it's not so obvious because on the other we could argue, as we said before, as we said in the previous perek, that the machshava of apostle has no effect. He's an apostle. Fine. Omalei. So Rabbi Yochanan answers him. No, the only way that's possible for the blood that's still in the neck of the animal to become shirayim after a posel of zrika, the only way is if the zrika was posel, because only if it was done with a thought of chutzas mane or chutzas mekaymei, by a kosher, that is, because that's the point at which it becomes pigle. When we talked before, and we're going to talk later on, and we're going to talk in the continuation of our perek about making the korban pigul by having machshava during one of the avodas, but ultimately, when does it actually become pigul? If the blood was never sprinkled on the mizbeach, it never becomes pigul. What's the moment at which it becomes pigul? When the zrika is done by a kosher. So you have to have that the zrika was done by a kosher in order for it to become pigul. By the same logic, you have to have that the zrika has to be done by a kosher for the rest of the blood to be considered shirah. But if it was done by a posel, with or without a machshava, then nothing happens. The rest of the blood is not shirayim, and therefore you can go and sprinkle on the mizbeach. Therefore, a kosher can do a new kabbalah, as we said in our Mishnah, and go and walk it over to the mizbeach and do the zrika. Okay, that's version one of the question, of the discussion. Rav Zvid Masni Hachi, Rav Zvid learned the discussion differently. That it started like this. Vomini Rish Lakish Min Avishnan. The question, according to the second version, wasn't if all of the blood that had been received so far was posel, namely that it was received or sprinkled or what have you by posel. The question rather would be, what if you have one individual kos, one individual cup of the blood? I've mentioned before that we're going to have in Arma Sefta, in this perek, and later on, we're going to have that when we use the word kos, it's shorthand for only part of the blood. In other words, the blood is received, when all the blood is received, or as much of it as possible, it's received in a mizrach, in a big basin. When the Gemara wants to talk about the blood, the different amounts of blood that are being used, maybe one of them was taken out of the azara, as we're going to talk about over here, then the Gemara uses the term kosin, like it was poured in a smaller cup, and then it was received to begin with in smaller cups, and then different things were done with those cups. So over here, what we're talking about is, suppose you have one particular coast of the blood became possible. So let's say, for example, that you took a coast of the blood and you took it out of the azara. Now that makes that blood purple to be sprinkled on the neck. At that point, does the rest of the blood that's in the neck of the animal, does it become shirayim? So therefore, you wouldn't, if so, then you wouldn't be able to do Kabbalah and do Zrika with it, because it would be shirayim already. The only thing you're supposed to do with it.
One curse of blood.
If you took one curse of blood and took it out of the Azara, does that now passel the rest of the blood to be sprinkled up? Does it passel the blood that's still in the neck that hasn't had Kabbalah done to it yet? In other words, if it was different coasts, if they had been Makabal in one coast and then in a second coast and they took one coast out, there's no question. So you could still sprinkle the other coast. That would be fine. Here the question is, you only have the one coast and then there's still blood in the neck. But now can you receive that blood? The question is, so that was the question. Omalei, according to the second version, Rabbi Yochanan answers in like this. Okay, look, I have to ask you first. Let me understand. What would you hold about a apostle who actually did the zrika? You're asking, according to the second version, you're not asking about the apostle doing zrika, like in the first version. You're asking about the kois that was taken out of the azar. So let's start with as background, what would you hold, what would happen with a apostle who did zrika? E apostle Meshavashirai. And if you're going to say that a person who was apostle is able to make the rest of the blood shirayim, and therefore that's it, there's no takana for this korban, you can't do anything else, well then, kos posel nami nisham shirayim. Then a kos posel will have exactly the same effect, because it's the same thing. The point is that the same way as the blood was sprinkled on the mizbeach by a posel, and therefore there's no undoing that, then the same thing would be the kos was taken out of the azara, and there's no undoing that, it's posel. And therefore, yes. So let's find out. What do you, Rish Lakish, hold about apostle? And once we know what you hold about apostle, then we'll be able to figure out the answer as far as a kos apostle. Because the apostle doing the zrika versus a kos apostle taken out of the azara are going to be exact fundamentally. They come out to exactly the same thing. So you, Rish Lakish, are asking about the case of kos apostle. What do you hold as far as apostle? If you hold apostle makes the rest of the blood shirayim, then a kos apostle does also. And if a apostle who does the zrika does not make the rest considered shirayim, that you're saying that when on Mishnah said yachta akosha v'kabel, it meant not only if the apostle did the kabbalah, it meant even if he did the zrika, that you're saying that akosha can still receive from the dama nefesh and start all over again, well then the same thing would be true as far as a kos apostle, that you would ignore that kos apostle, you would go and then spill it out and get rid of it, and you take more blood from the neck and do zrika with that. So according to the second version, according to the first version, Rish Lakish is asking about the apostle who did the zrika. According to the second version, rather, Rish Lakish is asking about a different case, about kos apostle, and Rabbi Yochanan is telling him whatever you would hold would be as far as apostle would also be the case as far as a kos apostle. There's no reason to ask it as a separate question. You might as well just ask about the apostle, because the same din is going to be either way. Okay. Fine. Speaking of this, that's what we have, yeah. But now we're going to have a bit more of a discussion about kosis. Bomine Abaya Miranda. Okay, so now Abaya asks, Rabiumi Medifti Masni Hok. Rabiumi Medifti learned the discussion in yet another way. He learned that it wasn't a discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, it was a discussion between Abaya and Rava concerning kosis. That he learned, he's not necessarily disagreeing with two previous ones. It might be that he's saying, I learned from my Rebbeim that, well, that's not the same discussion. It's going to be a different discussion regarding kosher. He may agree that there was that discussion between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish. But in addition, I also learned that you should know there was also a discussion between Abaya and Rava on a different case involving kosher. The question was like this. Bominei Abaya and Rava, kosher. Again, suppose you have one kos. Now, suppose in this case you did the Kabbalah to begin with in two koses. So you did half, you were Makabal half the blood in one kos and half in the other. Now, let's say that you took only one of those koses and went over to the Mizbeach and did all the Matonos, all the four applications of blood to the four corners of the Mizbeach, you did them all out of the one kos. What's the din now of the second? Is the second coast, so now does that first coast, which was used for the proper matanos, does it now make the second coast dochui? Does it make it that is pushed away, that's rejected? In other words, it's not to be used it's not to be used at all, and therefore you pour it into the water channel that ran through the Azara. There was the famous water channel that ran through the Azara, which when it came, for example, when the Azara was dirty with blood, as we're going to learn later, that they would stop it up and let the water overflow and then sweep away all the blood with it. But also they would use this amma when they had, for example, blood of a korban that was fossil, which is not supposed to be sprinkled on a mizbeach. They would use this amma. They would pour the blood away into that. And that way it doesn't go on the mizbeach. So in this case, you use one coast for all the matanos. Does the other coast now become dochri? Does it come now that's completely pushed away? It's completely rejected from being used for anything else, and therefore you pour it away into the amma. Oy shirayim. No, shirayim normally are spilled on the yisoid. That's the thing. If it's shirayim, if the second cup is shirayim, then we would say we take the contents of the second cup and we pour them along with whatever's left of the first cup onto the yisoid in the mizbeach, like you normally do. As opposed to if we say that's dochri, it would mean that you take the remainder of the first cup and spill that on the yisoid, and the second cup we pour away into the amma. So what is it? Amalei, so he tells him, that would actually be the subject of a machlokes between Rav Elazar ben Shimon and the Chachamim. The Tanya, namely, we learn in a braisa like this, L'maylahu omer es domer yishvach. Earlier in the psukim, it says over there that when it talks over there about the various types of chatois, so it talks about the chatos of the nasi, it talks about the chatos of the yachid. So in one of the psukim over there, it says that's doma yishvach, it's blood. After he does the matanos over there, so by the third nasi, the pasuk says, what do you do with the remainder of the blood? That's doma yishvach, it's blood he should spill onto the yisoid. It doesn't say it's cold doma, it doesn't say all the blood, it just says the blood. No, wait. L'masahu emaves kol dama yishvach. Later on, when it comes to the chatas of a yachid, it says that kol dama yishvach, all of the blood is spilled. So why the different wording? So it means like this. Minayim l'chatas shekibol dama ba'abar choses. So how do we know, therefore? Suppose we now talk about four choses. Suppose that he took the chatas shekibol dama ba'abar choses. Suppose he received the blood now, let's talk about four choses. Now, the same thing would apply if it was two kosis, and he did two matanas from each one. We're mentioning four, because that's the maximum that you could do and still be able to do one matana from each one. So you have four matanas by the chatas, one on each corner. So, minayim l'chatas shekibol dama ba'abar kosis. How do we know, therefore, that if you were to take a chatas and receive the blood in four different kosis, v'nosen matana achas mizeh or matana achas mizeh, and then you did one matana from each of the four kosis, how do we know that the remainder of each of those four cups gets poured onto the yisoid? That is why the second time around it says, and all the blood he should pour. Meaning, even though it's in separate cups, nevertheless, all of it, what's left after doing the daubing for the chatas, the rest of it goes onto the yisoid. The daubing, when the kohen dips in his finger and daubs it on the four corners of the mizbeach. On the other hand, on the other hand, suppose you took only one of these four koses and did all four matanas from it. You would think you call nishpach on the yisoid. You would think maybe the same thing. You pour out all the rest of them onto the yisoid. No, tamalim of es domo. That is why, by the soda nasi, instead the pasuk leaves out the word kol and says just it's blood you should pour. In other words, that there is a case. In other words, what the braisa is telling us is the pasuk is implying there's a case where you pour onto the yisoid all of the blood that's left over after doing the matanos, all the blood that was received in the kalim, and then there's a time when you don't do all of it, only some of it. Okay, Sad, so what does that mean? In this case, where all the matanos were done from one coast, who nishbach the yisoid, the head nishbach on the amma. Only that one do we pour the rest of it on the yisoid, the rest of them we pour into the first one, the one that we used for the matanos. The other, the rest of it is considered shirayim. The other ones that were not used for matanis at all are not considered shirayim. They're considered dochri, which is, as we said before, and therefore we pour them away into the amma. That's the water channel. It's called the amma, by the way, because it was an amma wine. Okay. That's opinion number one. That's the chacham. Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Remember, Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says no. Minayim l'chatas shekibol dama ba'abar kosis. How do we know that we receive the blood of a chatas in four kosis? V'nosen dalet matanis mikosach. And we get four matanis all from one cup. The second case that we said in the Braisa. how do we know Shekulin Nishpachim Yisoid? The first case we said was that you did one matana from each kohen. The second case, the Tanakhama had, was that you did all of them from one coast. Tanakhama had said that three out of the four coasts get poured away into the Amma, and only the fourth one gets placed on, gets poured onto the Yisoid. Because only the fourth one is only that one that was used for Matonis is considered Shirai, and the rest of it is considered Nidfa. Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon disagrees with that. He says that even in that case, you call them Nishpachim Yisoid, that you pour all of them onto the Yisoid, Tamalama v'es kol dom on Yishba. Therefore, he says that's why the passage says all of its blood you should pour away. So the question is, Vakhtiv has dominish, but meaning all the blood, meaning even though it's in four different cases. So the, what about Vakhtiv has dominish, but what is Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon doing with the Pasuk has dominish, but Amar Rav Ashi, Yahudu Ma'uti Shidayim Shabbat Sava Behem. Yes, but that comes, according to Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon, just to tell us that the Shidayim, whatever's left over in the neck of the animal, once you have a proper Kabbalah was done, once you have a proper Kabbalah and eventually a proper Zrika was done, then yes, the rest of what's in the neck of the animal can't be used for Kabbalah and for Zrika at all. That definitely has to be poured into the Amma. But anything that was received in cut, as long as it was received by Hesher, it was received by a Kohen Kosher, even though it wasn't actually used for Matanis, Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon would say it goes on to the Amma.
So there's your answer.
So only the blood that was left in the animal's neck.
Everything that came from Tosis,
according to him, would go. So therefore, so to answer the question, we said that does one kohen make the other one dochri, or does it make it shirayim? So now we have the answer. According to the Chachamim, it would make it dochri. The other three are poured into the Amma, and only this one is poured onto the Yisod. And according to the Balad of Rav Shimon, it makes all of them shirayim, and therefore you pour them all onto the Yisod.
Yeah.
The halacha is like a Chacham. But as far as the apostle making shirayim, again he said that no, only a kosher can make shirayim, and similarly a kosher apostle also doesn't make shirayim. But on the other hand, the bottom line is, once the Kabbalah was done by Hesher, then we're saying everybody agrees that the blood left in the neck of the animal is considered Shirayim, is not even considered Shirayim at that point, is considered Nidcheh, and it has to be and if you're going to do anything with it, it's going to be poured away into the Amma, according to everybody, according to the laws of Rav Shimon Anakim. If the Kabbalah was done by Kashrut, if the Kabbalah was done by apostle, then not. Then we're saying before that the apostle is not capable of making the rest of the, he doesn't have the koyach to make the blood in the neck of the animal be considered shirayim, therefore a kohen kosher can do a new Kabbalah and continue from there.
But if he was kosher,
then you can't do another Kabbalah after.
And
according to everybody. All that is according to everybody. The machlokas between Rav Elazar ben Rav Shimon and Chachamim is strictly about this dalad process. Then we said in the Mishnah, we mentioned three different cases where the Kabbalah was done properly, but then then something else was done with it. We had the following cases in the Mishnah. We had that if a kosher Kohen did the Kabbalah and then he gave it to apostle, then the apostle should give it back to the kosher, which was the discussion we had in the previous perek, whether he can hand it to him or whether the Kohen has to walk over and take it from him, etc. That was one. Then we had, he did the Kabbalah in his right hand and put it in his left hand. He has to put the keli back in his right hand and continue. And the third one was, if he did the Kabbalah in a kli kodesh and then poured it into a kli koil, then he has to pour it back into a kli kodesh. So the question is,
what's in a kli kodesh?
No, that's the point. If he did halach or he did zrika from a kli chayil, it would be possible. But like this, he only put it into a kli chayil and then stopped there. Then he can pour it back into the kli chayil dish, and nothing's been on. It has to be tar, the case, obviously. Actually, maybe not. The truth is, I mean, the blood is able to become the, well. Because I was going to say, I mean, first of all, you can't really have kalim not a tummy in the connection in the first place, but. There's a whole sugya in Pesachim about mashke-based mitbachaya, the liquids of the slaughterhouse, of the shechting area in the Beit Mikdash, that they're not able to become tameh. And we might have discussed it, but a mashke-based mitbachaya would be, among other things, the blood of the korban. So the blood, I don't remember the exact details. I mean, there are cases where the blood is able to become tameh, but there are cases where it can't. But anyway, that's fine. Anyway. The question is, the Gemara is going to focus on, why does the mission need to tell us three cases? We know that you can't be Makabal in the left hand. We know you can't be Makabal in a Kli Chayil. We know that a apostle can't be Makabal. why the need to repeat that in each case, and the kosher aspect. So anyone says it's true. People are kosher, but not from the pasuk. The follow-up is, we need to be told all these three cases. The yeshmin and pasul. Because if we only learned only the case of that where it was given to the apostle, have amina, then you would think like this, my apostle, fine, but what do we mean specifically? Which kind of apostle do we mean over here? Tomei, a Kohen who is Tomei. We're after all, the Chazi, the Avodah Sibur. We're after all, the Kohen Tomei is sometimes able to do the Avodah, is able to do the Avodah Sibur. So you could argue that therefore, just giving him the Kaili, when Sibur is Tomei, we learned before about the connection with the Kohen Pesach. So, not just the Korban Pesach, in general, Korban of Sibur. We said before that in previous Perek, that if the Sibur is Tomei, or most of the Koyanim are Tomei, or even most of the Koyanim in that, or even the Koyanim in that Mishmar are Tomei, and they don't have any other Mishmar available, then you do the Avoid of a Tumor. So a Koyan Tomei is, in certain cases, Koshal Avoid. So you could argue, therefore, fine, you give him the Kaili, that's not enough to pass it. Because after all, there are circumstances where he's Koshal to do the Avoid in the first place. But you would think, but when it comes to the left hand, you never have a case where avoida is kosher. You don't even have a case with kavanah sibur, where it's kosher with the left hand. So therefore, you would think maybe having placed it in the left hand makes it, that's it, it's gone. That's why I have to mention the left. The yashmin and smoil. On the other hand, though, if we only mention the case involving the left hand, you would say, yes, the difference is, there is one case where you do something with the left hand. The isbahech shayr of yemek supported. Namely, we find on Yom Kippur, where the Kohen Gadol does a certain avodah with his left. Namely, you have, when he's going into the Kodesh Kedoshim, he has a pan full of coals and he has a spoonful of turtles. And he takes them into the Kodesh Kedoshim, and then he pours the cup. How does he do it? So, on the face of it, the Gemara says in Yoma, by right, really what he's supposed to do, the main thing he's bringing in is the turtle. By right, he should be holding the turtle in his right hand, like you're always supposed to do. You're always supposed to hold, and the coals in the left hand. The thing is, the pan of coals is much heavier. And it's heavier, it's hotter. So therefore, to make it easier for the Kohen Gadol, we allow him in that unique case to carry the object that he's going to be doing the avodah with, namely the ketores, in his left hand. And to hold the pan of coals in his right hand. So there you have a case where smoil is kosher. So you would think, therefore, again, that maybe...
By offering him a tray, or he would hold both in one hand. Well, both hands holding both.
Well, first of all, I mean, we said before that when you do the avodah with the yamin, it has to be yamin only. It's more you can't have it. No, I understand that. But the point is, in other words, it wouldn't accomplish anything putting them on tray, because either way, then you need the right hand and the left hand together. And when it comes to the normal avodah, when it comes to the day-to-day avodah, you can't, for example, hold the mizrach with both hands. You have to hold it only with the right hand. You can have maybe the sayyeh, you can have the left hand is helping out a little bit, but where you would be able to do it with the right hand alone. On the tray, you couldn't do it with the right hand alone. Anyway, so there you have a case where smoil is kosher. So therefore, again, you would think that maybe by the same logic he puts the mizrach in his left hand, maybe that's not enough to pass the carbon. Okay, but nevertheless, you could have argued, av klichol loy, but on the other hand, a klichol, you could argue you never have a case where klichol is used for kachim. But on the other hand, the yeshmin klichol, but on the other hand, if we only have the case of klichol and not the other two, you would say the reason why klichol doesn't cancel it, mishum b'chazal v'kadoshinu, because you could right there on the spot, you could declare it a klichodesh. Just like you have, for example, in Sota, that it mentions over there that you bring a korban mincha in a metal, in a gold or silver or whatever tray, which is suitable to be made into a klichodesh, and you declare it a
klichodesh.
Well, actually not really declaring it, but the rule is avodas and mechanasim. The first time you do an avodah with this keli, it becomes kodesh. It becomes a kli kodesh. It becomes a kli shor.
Without
you saying it. Without, I don't think you need to say it specifically, but so the point is, a kli shor could become a kli kodesh. Avohana, loy, but a posel can't become a kosher. The left hand can't become the right hand, so you would think maybe not. And that's why we need all these cases. So the question now becomes like this. The Lahevelet doll. Okay, but don't you have a problem then? Shouldn't we say that, look, this blood was originally suitable to be used for the korban. It was suitable to be sprinkled on the mizbech. Now it became nidfa. Now it was pushed away. Now it was rejected because something was done with it. It was put in the left hand. It was held by a apostle or whatever. That now we should argue that maybe it becomes nidfa. It should be rejected and it can't become kosher again. Nidcha is not going to be nidra. It's not going to be nidra again.
Now we're talking about which.
We're talking in general over here. We're talking in all these cases in the Mishnah. where we said that he did the Kabbalah with the right hand and gave it to the left. What we're talking about, we're talking about over here that you took it from a Kli Kodesh and put it into a Kli Chol, etc. So the question is, why are we saying that you can do Chazorah? Why are we saying that all you have to do is put it back in your right hand or put it back in the Kli Kodesh or whatever and continue? Why isn't it considered Nidcha? And once it's Nidcha, then that's it. It's not Nira again. It can't become kosher again. Actually, Tosfos says maybe it's not referring to all the cases in the Mishnah. For example, it's not necessarily referring to the case where you gave it to the apostle, because fine, the apostle was acting, as we said before, in the first parak, he's acting like a shelf. He's just standing there and you put it in his hands and then you take it from his hands. The question is, for example, what about you put it in the Kli Chol? What about we have the case in the Mishnah where the blood spilled out of the Keli onto the floor, and we're saying you can collect it off the floor and do Zvika with it? Why don't we consider such a thing Dokli, that the blood has now been rejected from being used as a carbon, and now it can't become suitable?
From a Kli Chol, again, back to Kli Kodesh,
yeah.
That's a
yeah.
stronger one.
Yeah, okay. This is what Rav Yirmiyahu Migifki said in the name of Rabba. Hamani Chonan Amitzu. Yes, but we can say that our mission goes according to Chonan Amitzu. Delesle Dichuri. He doesn't hold of this concept of Dichuri at all. Now, we learned back in the first parak that we have Rav Yochanan saying that even Balei Chayim can be Dichuri. And even you have an animal that was kosher for a korban and then temporarily was disqualified for one reason or another, does not become requalified. We learned there, we didn't discuss it in the Gemara there, but the Gemara discussed it in other places, that Rav disagrees with that. Rav says, Balei Chayim in Nidchin, that living creatures can't become Nidcha, but dead things, for example, blood that's already in the Kodesh, in the Mizrach, can become Nidcha, and then it can't become Nira again. And then you have Chonan HaMitzvi, who disagrees with the whole concept of Nidcha. Even though it's Nidcha, it can still be Nira again. The Tanya, as we learned in the Gemara, Chonan HaMitzvi, remember? Chonan HaMitzvi says like this. Now, suppose you have a case. We know on Yom Kippur you have to have the two goats over there. You have the two goats, the Kohen Gadol does the girdle over there, and one is a Sar Lashem, and one becomes a Sar Lazal. What happens if after you do the girdle, later on you go and shech the Sar Lashem, and the blood is received in a Mizrach as usual. What if at that point the Sar Lazal dies? Now, what should we do? So if the third Lashem was still alive, then it would be less of a problem. Again, we say in Balei Chayim Nidchin, you would need to do another girdle. So you would need to start over again with a new girdle, but the animal itself wouldn't be Nidcha. The animal itself could be brought as a korban. If the third Lazozo died. So what do you do with the third Lashem? If it wasn't shechted yet, then you don't have so much of a problem. You do have to do another girdle, because you have to pick a new Sar Lazozo. But the Sar Lashem doesn't become Nidcha. But what happens if the Sar Lashem was already shechted, and then the Sar Lazozo dies? So now what are you supposed to do? So the Chachamim say, in that case, you have no choice. That blood of the Sar Lashem is now possible. And therefore, you have to spill it out into the Amma and start over with a new girdle and start all over again.
So, say the same Lashem needs the Tehillah Zadok.
Well, yeah. And
if he doesn't have it, it's right.
Now, so Chonan HaMitzvi disagrees with that. He says, Afilu Dam B'Kodesh, even if the blood of the Sar Lashem is already in the Kas, it's already in the Mizrach, maybe Chaveru Mezavik Lo. All you need is you bring another animal, another Sar, and match it up with it, and declare it the Sar Lazozo. So therefore, we could see that Chonan HaMitzvi doesn't hold of the concept of Nidcha, whereas the Chachamim knew. The Chachamim would say the blood of that Sar Lashem is Nidcha, and we don't have any reason to say that. No. Yeah. Okay, so we can say, therefore, that our Mishnah goes according to Chonan HaMitzvi, and that is why we're saying the blood was placed into the left hand or given to the czar or what have you. It can still be undone. It's not Mitzvah.
The Chachamim would not agree
with that. Rav Ashi says, here's a different answer. You don't have to say our Mishnah goes only like Chonan HaMitzvi. Kol should be yodoy lo habadichu. Whenever you have that he's capable of undoing the situation, now with the third Amishtalayah, you can't, Rashi says, because not necessarily are you going to be able to get another third. It's not completely in your hand. It's exactly what it sounds like. In other words, you need to go and find another third to be a third Amishtalayah. What if you can't? Do they? No, they don't necessarily. So what if you can't find another one? So it's not completely the other. What if you can't find Because who says that they'll give him another one? They don't necessarily have fair ones in the Mishnah. He would have to go to a goat dealer and buy one from him and arrange to pay him after Yamsa, after Yom Kippur. Who says the guy's going to be willing to sell it to him? In that sense, it's not considered the other. There's other explanations also of what the yodai means, and in particular, Tosfos talks about that the yodai means that you're actually accomplishing a mitzvah by undoing it. By undoing whatever it is that caused the psul, you're accomplishing a mitzvah. So therefore, for example, when it comes to over here, you're accomplishing a mitzvah thereby. The biyodei means, in other words, that a mitzvah is being accomplished in the course of fixing it up. Like here, you're accomplishing a mitzvah. You're doing kabbalah. You're doing halacha, etc. Tosfos mentioned that briefly, and one of the achronim b'Keren Ora discusses it in more detail. Okay, so. If it's biyodei, then it's not dichui. Over here, it's biyodei, because he can put it back in his right hand. Nobody's preventing him. He can take it back from the czar. He can collect it all from the floor, etc. Therefore, it's biyodei. Therefore, that's not considered dichui. Now, again, not like the case of the tzar and the shaleach, where you would have to go where you need somebody else's cooperation. Omer of Shaya.
So it's a second opinion.
But therefore, we can make our Mishnah work even if it's the chacham. They would say by the tzar and the shaleach, it's dichui. But over here, it's not. Amar of Shaya, Kavasei de Rav Ashi Mistabra. Yes, it's logical to say, like what Rav Ashi is saying. Because Man Shamat Lei Deisle Dichoyin, which Tana in particular do we find holds of the whole concept of Dichoy? Rav Yehuda. That is specifically, we know Rav Yehuda said that. The Tanan, as we learn in connection with the Korbanos of Yom Kippur, with the Sari Lashem and the Sari Lazazel, the Tanan, we learn in a Mishnah Deir Yoma, the Oid Amar of Yehuda. Rav Yehuda also said, the rule is as follows, Nishva Hadam, if the blood of the Sari Lashem spilled, so now it can't be used for the Zrika anymore, Yom with Samishtaleach, then we have to take the Sari Mishtaleach and lock it up and leave it to die, because now it's Nishva, and you have to start over again with a new girdle, with two new Sikhim. And the other way around, if the third of Mishtaleach died, Yishofet Hadam, you should pour away the blood of the Sari Lashem, because again, it's Nidre. V'shamin in Leja Omar, Kol Shav Yadir Lehavei Dichon. On the other hand, we also find the same of Yehuda says that when something is in your hand, that you alone are able to fix up the situation, then it's not considered Dichon. So we see that Rav Ashi's point is very logical, that yes, you can say there's a concept of Dichon, but we can say that dichui doesn't apply when it's biyodai. And that explains our Mishnah, therefore, where you took the mizrach and put it in your left hand, you're able unilaterally to put it back in your right hand. The same thing with the pulsal, and the same thing with nishba halaritva. Only if you don't have the ability unilaterally to undo it.
Right.
Because that's what Rabbi Yehuda says.
Right.
The Tanya, and we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that it's not nidcha if you're able to fix it up. The Tanya, because we don't know Braita, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda says, after they finish shechting all of the korbanos Pesach, so now you have blood all over the floor over there, and you have a problem that some of this is, so what do you have now? There may be over here the entire blood of a korban where none of it got on the mizbeach, and therefore that korban is going to be possible. So what do you do in order to fix up that situation? So and there's a case of dichui, because once it lands on the floor, it's nitha, but Rabbi Yehuda holds, that's the point. Rabbi Yehuda holds, what the Kohenim would do at the end, after they finished with all the korbanos pesach, they would take one cup and fill it full of all the mixed blood that's on the floor, and they would throw it one dash of blood on the wall of the mizbeach above the yisod, which is the normal way you do for the korbanos pesach. In other words, this way at least, if there could have been one of these korbanos where the blood spilled and never reached the mizbeach, then at least like this, now you have a basis for saying that the blood of this korban was in this cup and did reach the mizbeach. And therefore, that's the point. Shmamina kosha b'yodah le'avadichus. Therefore, we see that Yehuda holds, even though it was nidcha, when it spilled on the ground, now it's unnidcha, because it's b'yodah, you're unilaterally able to do it. Shmamina, good. So that proves, whatever Rav Ashi's point, that even if we say nidcha, but it's not nidcha if b'yodah, Therefore, our mission, it can work like that. Gufa. So now getting back to what Rabbi Yehuda just said, let's analyze what this step we just regarding this thing about the carbon tax. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, they would fill up one cup from mixed blood that was spilled all over the floor. She'im yishofach apaman. This way, if the blood of one of the carbonate pesach spilled and never reached the mizbeach, nimta shuhu machshire. This way, he's able to make it kosher. This way, at least now you have the ability to say about any given carbon pesach that we can assume that this is the one that whose blood just reached the mizbeach. Now, continue the braisa. So the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yehuda, what good does that do? This blood was not received in a keli, and we learned in the previous parak that if the blood spills directly from the neck of the animal onto the floor, then it's potel. It has to be first received in a keli. So the Chachamim are saying, what good does it do to put it in a keli now once it landed on the floor? It's potel. That's the question. But no, Yadi, how are they supposed to know? To know that it necessarily came from the neck, right? No, they say to him, but maybe it wasn't a scabble in a keli, and therefore what you're doing, therefore the problem is you may be taking blood, which is possible to go on the mizbeach, and sprinkling it, and you're not supposed to do that. So he answers them, you're right. When I say that you should fill up a cup with the blood on the floor, I'm only talking about when it was first in a scabble in a keli. So the question is, so now we can turn around the question. Rabbi Yehuda, how is he supposed to know that it was received in a cave? What if it did go directly from that? The answer is Kurinim Zrizin, because we know the Kurinim are very zoriz, they're very quick and very careful and very sharp to do the avoda properly. But adds in a line over here that if there's Zrizin and therefore they do receive the blood, they don't allow it to spill on the floor out of the mix. Then the question is, Shittim Kubethis adds from the Gemara and from based on the Gemara and Sochim, if there's still Zorid, how did it spill in the first place? And the answer is they had it spill in the first place. The answer is because it's exactly that. Because there's Rizid, Agav Rizid, but Avdin Haya, they work very, very quickly on the Shtapkin, so it can happen that it spills. So in other words, there's Zrizus helps that Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's very unlikely that blood actually went from the neck directly onto the floor. They must have been careful to receive it in a keli. But afterwards, they're quickly handing it back and forth to each other, so it could have spilled, right? Well, no, some of it spills, that's not a problem. You do Zrizus with the rest. The problem is that all of it might have spilled. And you have the famous, because they were handing it back and forth very quickly. And you have the famous, we say in the Seder Korban Pesach, every Erev Pesach, that they're standing over there in line, we have Vazich Hesef and Vazich Zohav and handing them one to the other. You have a famous thing that's brought in the Sefer Shevet Yehuda that brings from a letter that a Roman consul or a Roman, whatever, some kind of Roman official wrote. His impression of what the Seder Korban Pesach looked like, and he described how these bases of blood are flying back and forth like arrows, because they're very, very, very quickly, right. Okay, hey.
Where was that?
The Sefer Shevet Yehuda, it's brought also out of the Seder, from there, whatever, it's a letter that some Roman official wrote while the Vesemitz was still standing, describing he watched the Korban Pesach being done, and his view of what it was like, yes. So that answers that question. And we heard it saying there's no concern that this blood went directly from the neck on the floor because the kohenim has risen. Either it's risen, had it spilled, because there's risen, that's why it's spilled. We have to ask another question. But therefore, that's what he's saying. You can fix it up by taking it from the floor and spilling it and putting it on there. Now we have another question. Okay, but don't you have another problem? You have the trickling out blood that's mixed in it. We said in the previous perek that only the dama nefesh is only the spurt of blood that comes out as the animal is dying. It's kosher for the zrika. Not the dama ur, not the blood from the skin when you first start cutting it. Not the dama tamsis, not the blood that trickles out afterwards after the dama nefesh is gone. And inevitably you have dama tamsis on the floor over there as well. The answer is, and you can't put that on the mizbeach, it's possible. The answer is, Rabbi Yehuda l'taymei, Rabbi Yehuda can be going according to his own svara, dama tamsis kori dam. He says that dama tamsis is considered blood. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, dama tamsis ba'azhara, the Chachamim say that eating dama tamsis is only a lav. The chiyuv koris would only be for dama nefesh, the Chachamim say. But Dhammakamsis would be also only by a lab. Rabbi Yehuda, however, but Karis. Rabbi Yehuda says you actually have Karis for it. So therefore we see that he holds that Dhammakamsis is considered blood. If it's considered blood, then it can also be sprinkled on a mizbeach. Why not? However, however, Va'amar Rabbi Elazar, that doesn't work though, because don't you know, didn't Rabbi Elazar say, Moedir Rabbi Yehuda in Kapara She'enu Machaper, Rabbi Yehuda does agree when it comes as far as Kapara that Dhammakamsis cannot be used for Kapara. Whatever, because the blood that's in the soul is mechaper, meaning dam shanefesh yosebay kori dam, for purposes of kapara, only the blood with which the life of the animal goes out is considered dam, sha'ena nefesh yosebay any kori dam. By the time you get dam akamsis, the animal's dead already. So even Rabbi Yehuda would agree, even though he says, fine, you chayev kori for eating dam akamsis, but nevertheless, it's still not dam as far as kapara.
Dam akamsis is the venous blood.
I don't know, the pashas, the dam and nefesh, it's the penis blood, it comes spurting out and you first check the
arterial.
Okay, maybe it's arterial and venous, I don't know, whatever. The damatamsis is what trickles out afterwards. Maybe, yeah, I guess it's from the venous, I guess it's from whatever left in the veins, whatever, yeah. For the reason, yeah, whatever. Anyway. So that doesn't work. We can't say that Rabbi Yehuda allows you to sprinkle damatamsis. He agrees that it's not good for kapala. No. Eller Rabbi Yehuda l'taimei, no, rather Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his own shitta, drama ein dam vachal dam. He says that in general, min b'minoi is not bottle, which we're going to learn and we're going to have a whole sugya about it later on the Sefer. So Rabbi Yehuda holds, therefore, blood cannot be mevatel blood. It's different types. One is dama nefesh, one is not. Doesn't matter. It's still all blood from the animal, and therefore it can't be mevatel each other. So now how does that work? Still, you can't use dama kamsis for kapara. The Tosfos mentions two possibilities. Either he has in mind that in this cup, whatever is dama nefesh should be actually validly put on the mizbeach. Whatever in this cup is dama kamsis, we should consider as if it was water that was pouring on the mizbeach, and that would be okay. That's one possibility. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that Rabbi Yehuda might hold, like Rabbi Eliezer, who says later on in our Masechta, who says that if dama nefesh gets mixed with dama kamsis, then it's kosher to sprinkle it. So one way or the other, Rabbi Yehuda would hold that that's okay, whereas the Chachamim disagree, because they hold Dhammakamsis is not Dham, it's going to be Mevatel, the Dhamma Nefesh, and therefore no good. Okay. Amalahim continues the discussion like this. Amalahim Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda asks the Chachamim like this. Lidivreichem, according to your logic, that you're saying you don't take a cup of blood at the end to dash against the mizbeach because it's no good, that you're going to have damakamsis in there, etc. According to you, lama potikin hazara. Why, on Erev Pesach, do they stop up the ama in the hazara? So like this, normally you have the ama running through the hazara, this water channel running through the hazara, but on Erev Pesach, they stop it up so that the blood doesn't drain out through the ama and go out into Nahal Kidron. Now, according to me, there's a reason to do that, because we want that blood to stay on the floor so that at the end we can collect a cup of it and pour it on the mizbeach. But according to you, that we don't do that anyway. What's the point? Why don't we just leave the ama? Apparently, that's what we're going to say, yeah. No, so probably what they would do is, in Seder Korban Pesach, we mentioned that what they would do is at the end is they would have the water flood the floor and clean away all that and then take all the blood.
But here,
apparently what the Gemara means is that to begin with, before Erev Pesach, what they would do is they would, on the morning of Erev Pesach, whatever, they would block off the inflow into the Azara. So you don't have water flowing through the Amun. Now, you still have normally
inflow, but not the outflow.
But not normally you would have normally both the inflow and the outflow open. You have water flowing through it, and therefore when blood spills on the floor, it eventually flows out over there, and goes out with the water. Like this, I guess they would block off the inflow of the water, the inlet. So you have, blood could still go out, but they block off the outlet so that water flows.
Right.
So the only thing that the Azara is going to be flooded with now is blood. It's not going to be flooded with water. But according to me, there's reason to do that. According to you, Chachamim, why bother? They said to him, Shvachu l'vnei Aaron, shihalchu adar kubusein b'dam. Yes, but there's a different reason for it. Because it's praiseworthy for the b'nei Aaron, for the Kohanim, that they should be walking up to their ankles in blood, or up to their knees, actually. In other words, we want to demonstrate, first of all, how many korbanos are being brought, and second of all, also how... Kubusein means their knees.
Their thighs?
Their knees. So in other words, what it means is that, so what it means is that we want the floor to be flooded with blood on Erev Pesach in order to show, first of all, it's a shvach that we see how many korbanos were brought and how much work the kohenim did. We also see how precious the avodah is for them, that they're not repelled and disgusted by all this blood. Adarabba, they have no problem walking through it. Therefore, the Chachamim say, because of that, we prevent the blood from draining out until we're done with the avodah and then we clean the azara.
Yeah,
nothing to do with collecting a cup of the blood and pouring it on the zeh.
But it still doesn't address the
Chachamim are saying
there's a reason to do that.
So. Fine, but not the reason. The reason is not in order that we can take some of it and pour it on the mizbeach. The reason is as a shvach to bnei Aaron.
So they didn't pour it on the mizbeach.
According to the Chachamim, that's right. So they're going to ask about Gam HaVichatzitza. Okay, but don't you have a problem? And in that case, when they're walking around in the Azorah, if they're walking on blood, it's going to be a chatzitza between their feet and the floor. The answer is lachu. No, because the blood is moist. It's wet. V'loi HaVichatzitza. So the wet thing is not a chatzitza. It's not. As we learn in a Mishnah in Mikvos, Hadam, a brice actually, Hadam, Vavyoi, blood and ink, Vahadvash, Hacholov, and honey and milk, Yuvashin, Chotzin, if they're dry, then they're Chotzin on your skin, Lachin, and Chotzin, if they're wet, then if they're moist, then they're not a Chotzin, because the water washes them away.
So the water prevents the blood from drying up.
Yeah, but no, so the point is, in other words, the same thing over here, the blood is still moist, maybe they did have some water mixed in with it as well, but the point is, it's liquid, therefore it's not a chatzitza, it moves away, yeah. Okay, the question is, yes, but don't you have a different problem? Then their clothes are going to get all dirty with blood, and also the Tanya, and we learned in the Brice that we learned earlier, we learned in the second parak that if the Kohen's clothes are dirty, he does the avodah, then his avodah is fossil. Mr. Stashin, yeah, it's dirty with blood, yeah. The chi tema the mablu. So you'll say, okay, maybe what they do is they hitch them up. So that it's not, they hitch them up. They hitch them up around their waist or whatever, above, higher up on their legs, so that the lower parts of their legs that are in the blood are not touching the clothes. Can't spell Tanya, but we also learn in a Braita, which we also learned over there in the Sugya about Big Corona in the second parak. Midoy, when the Pasuk says that the clothes have to be midoy, his measurement, means kimidase, they have to be his exact size. They shouldn't be too short and they shouldn't be too long. And we've been kind of crazy, we did this, and so we said over there, if you hitch them up, you have a problem. Okay. So now you have a problem, no matter what. If you have that much blood in the Azorah, either the clothes are getting dirty, or you're hitching them up, but then you can't do the Avodah. The answer is, yes, but they can hitch them up. When do they walk through the blood is when they're walking over the Evorim, the pieces of the korbanos to bring to burn to the kevesh, where afterwards they'll be taken up from there and burned on the mizbeach. The lav avodah. That is not an avodah. Therefore, they can hitch them up. The question: what do you mean? Below, that's not considered an avodah. Well, Tanya, we learn in a bright that the hikr of a kohen is a curl where a lachas they burn on kevesh. When the pasuk says the kohen should offer everything, that refers to walking the pieces over to the kevesh.
So it is an avodah.
No, Ella by Halachas Eitzim Lamar Racha Dalal Avodah. No, not Halachas Eivorim, but rather Halachas Eitzim. When they're walking wood, when they're carrying over wood for the wood pile on the Mizbeach, that's not an Avodah, and therefore... Wait. So the question is, Ul Avodah Heisi Adli, so what do they do during the Avodah itself? During the Avodah itself, any of the other Avodahs, the Kabbalah, the Halacha, the Zrika, the Halachas Eivorim, etc., what are they doing then to prevent their clothes from getting dirty? The answer is, Adli, what they do is they walk around on ledges. They have ledges that are built into the floor over there. They have ledges that are built into the floor over there, where therefore the top of the ledge is higher than the blood level. That's the point we're saying. Let's say, for example, they would figure out by the time all the korbanos Pesach are finished being shefted, you're going to have, let's say, 6 inches of blood on the floor. So fine, they would build 6-inch-high ledges in various places in the Azorah, and the kohen would walk on those while they're doing their other avodas. So that way they don't have to hitch up their clothes. At those points, they're not walking through blood. But afterwards, for things where they don't require bigger corner, for example, walking wood over to the mizbeach, for that they can be walking through the blood, and it's a shvach for them that they should be, that they're not repulsed by it, and that they did so many korbanos, and for that they hitch up their clothes.
What is the legend look around?
The ledges were built into the floor, Rashi says, therefore it's not a chatzitza.
So
The letters were built from it built. Yeah, they were built out of stone, built into the floor. So in other words, you had in some places the floor was flat, and then you'd have, let's say over here, you'd have a long ledge, like a catwalk, sort of.
We interrupted, or they would fall.
No, I guess it was enough that the Kohanim could be able to walk around on it for wherever they needed to.
They
were made of stone, and they were built into the floor. So that way, they could walk on those, which were the forests for the things where they needed to be doing avodah, where they needed to be wearing the kohanim, and they can't hitch it up, and where they got them have to be clean. And then, yeah, they would hitch up their clothes and get off the catwalks and walk on the regular floor when they're doing other things.